That was a fine introduction to the philosophical considerations, but it's also it illustrates the problem that David Price has had in chairing this committee. We had three members of the committee and represented three different views on practically everything, and which makes it hard to come up with a single document. What made it even harder was that we kept exchanging, we kept trading places. And so now I'd like to introduce David Price, who will tell you what we produced out of this philosophical mixture.
Walt, that you are probably the only one that could afford the luxury of moving from one place to another. As I told you before, I have a difficult time maintaining even one position. This kind of a job has a lot of fringe benefits. And the best one was getting to know John Wiester and Walt Hearn. I have one regret, and that is that I didn't become active in the ASA a little bit sooner. I've been a member since, only he knows when. It's been a long time since I've been paying dues. But I've never been active, and I just got into the thing a couple of years ago. And if Walt is any example of the caliber of leadership in the ASA, then I've been missing out. But I have to tell you that I got acquainted with Walt at the airport about 2 years ago. And I called Walt to find out how I'd recognize him. He was rather evasive. he passed it off as, well, you'll know me. And I, you know, begin to wonder. Have any of you seen Walt dressed up in his tribal clothes? Well, I'll tell you a little bit about them. I think he combs his ponytails with something before he gets on the plane, and I know he shines a shoe somehow. But he wears a t-shirt. I call it the Mousy t-shirt. And of course it has a message. So when I saw Walt get off the plane, I knew him. I he was right. I didn't look around. I didn't say, is that Walt? That's Walt. It had to be Walt. And I found out something more about that Mousy t-shirt. Walt came over to my place a couple of months ago and had a group of young people over there, Christian young people from my daughter's church. And Walt didn't know them, of course, and they didn't have too much planned the first night we were there. They came over. And Walt entertained them for 2 hours. Now, it wasn't pure entertainment. Walt had something in mind. And I found out then why he wears this t-shirt, this Mousy t-shirt with a message. Walt kept these young people talking about spiritual things for 2 hours, a job that I think any counselor, any trained counselor would have been more than proud of. And I found out then that Walt's t-shirt is designed to trigger some kind of response. Walt doesn't care what kind of response. Just to strike up a conversation. I couldn't help but think of St. Paul. Pardon me, Walt, but that's a thought that came to mind. I will be all things to all men so that I might win some to Christ. And that's the kind of man I've had the privilege of associating with for the last couple of years. And, well, I have to tell you, we had a hard time just picking a name. The name we have is Committee for Integrity in Science Education. Can you believe that? Sounds like something that Moses wrote down on a tablet in with an iron pen. And we had a tentative name for our paper. If I can recall it, we had several, but the one I liked or disliked most was where is that first one? Yeah. We wanted to get the message across that we were a committee for integrity in science education, so we came up with a name that would certainly get this message across, and so we felt that a name such as a plea for integrity in science education might do the job. And I wasn't too happy. Walt was very unhappy. And Walt and I went over to visit my son, and he said, "What's the name of your paper?" "Oh, Plea for Integrity in Science Education." He says, "Dad, you're not serious." I said, "Well, what's the matter, Dana? We're not serious. We're just kind of playing around with names." He says, "Dad," he says, and sons have a way of saying it so that you get the message. He says, "Nobody will ever read a paper with a name like that." Now, Walt was listening. I was sort of playing with something else, you know, when your sons talk. But Walt was listening, and when we finally got around to the third draft, we had a title. And the third draft came out with the title, "Get It Right." And it was a catchy title. And of course, knowing Walt, he wasn't serious. He was just trying to elicit some kind of response. And he got it. We sent that third one out, and the people that didn't read the paper read the title. And they all sent back something. Most of them, something like, "Got it wrong," or "Let's..." "Let's get a new title." So we did. We have a title for our paper, and Teaching Science in the Climate of Controversy. And we think it's a good title. We think it says what it's supposed to say. It's long. I can't always remember it. And I think Bob even stumbled over it the other night. We got some kind of a atmosphere of controversy, but it doesn't matter. Our title is there, and it conveys what we want it to say. Today's science classroom is a center of a battle, a real all-out struggle, a struggle between two extremes, the extremist position called creationism and evolutionism. And the science classroom teacher, is caught right in the middle. Now, who's going to help this science classroom teacher? That's right, look around. Look at each other. Look around the room. The people sitting in this room are those people that are going to be helping this science classroom teacher, and there aren't many others. There are very few people who are not on the extremes of this controversy. We call ourselves moderates. Maybe that's flattery. I don't know. There are a lot of extremists in our moderate position. However, there aren't many people that are really trying to help the classroom science teacher solve this problem, the problem of creationism and evolutionism, and come up with something concrete that teacher can stand upon. And if we don't help him, who's going to? The science teacher is a little bit frustrated. He's caught in between. And a little background might help explain this statement. The ASA has been involved in this controversy for a long time. I've only been involved in it, or even interested in it, or even aware that it was a controversy since I read a publication that Harold Hartzler knows very well, Modern Science and Christian Faith. Now that gave me a new perspective on evolution. I'd been trained an evolutionist. I mean by that, went right up through biology, chemistry, and everything. Then I read a Modern Science, Christian Faith, and that gave me a little different perspective. Hey, what is this? You know, some questions. They're not all solved. And the ASA has been involved in this controversy for a long time. Of course, the ASA started in 1941, so I assume they've been involved since 41. And at the time this was printed, it was one of the best things out. There wasn't too much available then. It wasn't enough for some ASA members. A few wanted to be much, much more directive. Some of those people had a different view of Genesis. Perhaps a different interpretation of time. We now call them recent earth people. I don't know what they were called then, maybe the same thing. But these people left. They didn't feel we were quite directive enough. Warm climate must have markedly increased their metabolism because they suddenly became active. In fact, they became what I call activists. And by that I mean that they became active in science education, by producing educational materials for use in the schools, by becoming actively involved in decisions made at local and state levels, by becoming specialists in public relations. And one only has to look at the itinerary of one of their staff members. Look at the traveling they do. The numbers of people contacted by one of their staff members is astronomical. Not many of us could keep up with that pace full time, 24 hours a day. And they do it. And they have become specialists at what they're doing, and the impact has been enormous. They've had a tremendous impact. They've earned the right. I'm not begrudging this. They've worked at it. And they've had a tremendous impact on science education, the science classroom, and the churches of this country. So much so that the word creationist today has to be redefined. I still call myself a creationist. But I'm an old-timer. I'm stubborn. I just won't drop it. But when I do so, I have to sometimes explain myself. But, you know. So, the term creationist has really been redefined. When we use it today, it often implies recent earth usage. Now, there's another development which has lagged a little bit behind this development of recent earth creationism, and that is the backlash in the educational establishment. It was inevitable, it was slow in coming, but it's here, and it's no longer a backlash. It has moved the pendulum to, I hope I'm not just a pessimist, well I hope I am a pessimist, but I think Walt knows what I mean. We attended a meeting together in Sacramento, I'll tell you about that. But the what we call evolutionism position, or just call it the evolutionist, but most of us here are evolutionists of some sort. The word to us is not a word that we can't use, so I don't like to use the word evolutionist to describe them, but these are those we call them militant evolutionists, or atheistic, or materialistic, or just evolutionism is one way to describe it. So if I, terminology can be a little bit tricky in this whole discussion. So if I am leading you astray, or if you don't agree with my terminology, please tell me. But I would, I think you know the people I mean. These are the extremists, and not all of them are extremists. Let me clarify that. I'd say most of them are in the mainstream of education, but there's still a backlash. And they have actually developed a committee for correspondence, and they have a publication, Creation Evolution Newsletter, that I hope most of you read, because you can't keep up with events unless you take the Creation Evolution Newsletter. And the net result is that they have, I think, effectively blunted the recent Earth creationist impact upon science education. Now, not to the extent that the recent Earth people aren't still effective. And a lot of what they've done, we are still reaping the benefits of. By that, I mean some of the textbook decisions made in California regarding dogmatism. The book still could be a lot more dogmatic on certain issues. And those, the dogmatism, the anti-dogmatism statements requested by the California, by the creationists in San Diego, they're all over the country. I shouldn't give the impression they're just in Southern California. Not all the nuts are in Southern California. And I don't imply that these people are, but many people think everything from California is that way. It isn't. We have a few moderates occasionally. So the recent Earth people are all over the country. And I didn't mean to imply the word nut to apply to recent Earth people. Please don't make that correlation, because I don't mean that, and I don't feel that way about them. Now, the ASA position, what have we been doing? Where are we? Well, there's certain things we can say. A lot of positive things I can say. I'm not going to have time to say them all, but we're doing a lot of things. I mean, a lot of publications. ASA members are publishing. Look at the bookstore and look at the publications by ASA members and like kind. Lots of good literature. But when we're talking about the controversy that gets to the science classroom and to the science teacher, we've kept a very low profile. Our voice has been a quiet one, a moderate one, yes, and I like that position. That's why I'm here. That's my position. But we haven't had too much of an impact on science education where the battle is being fought. I can't help but think of Walt Hearn's phrase, ASA is the best kept secret in this country. Now, I don't know if that's true. I think it's an overstatement. but is Eric Nelson here? Stand up, Eric, and Cynthia, would you please? Stand up, Cynthia. I mean, you're both here. Thank you. Eric is is a good example, Walt, of what you're talking about. Just hate to get sidetracked too long. Well, I'm sidetracked. Eric was reading Genesis 1, Bob Newman's Newman et al. And there's a footnote in there. What was it? Echo. And there's a footnote in there, and in it there was a footnote mentioning the ASA, American Scientific Affiliation. Now, Eric had been looking for something like this. He said there was a need for something like this. Thank you, God, for showing me this. All I have to do is find it. So he started his search. He started looking. And he called and he talked, and he wasn't able. Now, no offense. I know we've got a campaign going and we're making progress, but we're still not there. Eric looked for 3 months. He called Mankato. That the fire put them out of business. He was a little behind schedule there. This was just a few months ago, about a year ago. So Mankato was long gone. Finally, he turned it over to his wife. I guess most of us learn slowly, but that that's what it took. Cynthia worked, she was secretary in a church. And she asked the pastor. She says she didn't think there's a chance in a thousand he'd know. But she says, Pastor, do you know about the ASA? He says, yes, we just happen to have a member here. So Eric had a link, and they got together. And here's Eric. He's here for his first conference. He's leaving in a few minutes. But he made it. And our low profile is gradually, I think, disappearing. And we're all intending to change that profile. But nevertheless, the victims of this inability somehow for the moderates to get their message across are the science teachers. And so we set about to do something to correct this. Now, I don't know whether it was Walt and John. John Wiester was in the middle of all this, and Walt and John got together at the ASA annual meeting 2 years ago. Walt and I got together in Denver, and I think Walt, John Wiester and I got together in Denver. I think Walt and I are leaving this whole thing up in the air as to who got together first to see how the paper comes out. If it comes out favorably, Walt and I will both claim the credit for having started this thing. if it doesn't turn out so well, the other guy did it. Walt and John did it. Yeah. At any rate, the three of us finally got together. We got together at Wiester's Ranch in Buellton, and we were reacting. I've given you clues, but we were reacting to the situation in science education. We resented having the science teacher left up in the air. We wanted the creationist to have a real voice. We felt that the voice was being weakened by the recent Earth position, because as soon as the people who are trained in science hear about 10,000 years, they turn it off. Now, I say that respectfully. I don't know how God made this Earth. And he could have made it to look like an old Earth and really be a young Earth. And I say that seriously. I don't know. It keeps me humble in this thing, because someday we'll all find out. And I put a very low probability that God would do such a thing. Somehow it violates my concept of God, that he would make an old Earth, a young Earth, look old, which is what the recent Earth people, they say it looks old, looks young, and it is young. God could have done it that way. Maybe he did. It keeps us humble to think of that possibility, doesn't it? Whatever. Most people in science, as you well know, I'm not telling most of you folks something that you don't already understand very well. I'm sort of filling in for those who may be a little bit wondering what's happening here. And the position is weakened, the creationist position is weakened. We felt that should be strengthened. Number two, we were reacting to something published by the National Academy of Sciences. They published a booklet called Science and Creationism. And in it, they had a good booklet, a very nice, beautiful booklet. I'll show it to you here. glossy, well-written, a lot of good material, and many of you have seen it. But there are some statements in there that we took issue with. And it seemed to us that they were just as dogmatic as anything coming from the Institute for Creation Research in San Diego. There it is, you read it. Some of you might think it's dogmatic, some of you might not. But in view of the fact that Ramapithecus has now been removed as a possible link between apes and man, we really don't know where man came from. The fossil record really doesn't tell us exactly where we came from. And so we took issue. We're not saying that someday the evidence might not be there, but this to us indicates dogmatism. So we wanted to rewrite this with an open question. So we were reacting to the two extremes, and we felt that the science teacher needed a little more help from a moderate position. And so it was that we got in the first year to the third draft. And we circulated the third draft, teaching climate, teaching science in climate of controversy. And that third draft came back, and as I say, we got a lot of feedback on the title, and we changed it. And we got a lot of feedback that we listened to, and these are the results of our feedback. We made some major changes. We decided to design the major emphasis to meet the needs of the science classroom. Now, before, we'd been sort of trying to hit here and here and here. So we focused on the science classroom. We moved the section which gave specific help to the teacher up front, and we eliminated part of it. We eliminated a section that Dan Wonderly and I were particularly fond of, called Coral Reef Building. In it, we call the section How Science Works. And it was an indirect way to get in how coral reefs are built. If you know Dan Wonderly, you know what we were aiming at. Limestone is a long time in forming, and a coral reef is limestone, and so it took millions of years to form this. And so we were indirectly trying to get in something about the age of the Earth while showing, kind of sneaky, you know, kind of showing how science works. And using this as a demonstration of good scientific procedure and how we problem solve. Well, we had to delete that. We hated to do it. Still around, and maybe we can use it for something else. But we also decided we couldn't meet, really refute. Just shut that. Well, yeah, put number two up. We felt this, or maybe I felt this was a little bit, I don't know, Walt's response. He's a lot more broad-minded than I am on these subjects, but I felt this to be a little misleading. I always resent it when they line up the skulls with the implication that man descended from ape by putting in some Australopithecus or some other in-between skull. Now, that, you know, you look at that and you say, hey, we sure did, didn't we? However, the first one's an ape, the last one's a human, the middle one, we have skulls of Australopithecus. The question is, was it ape or man? Several million years old, we don't have links between that creature, that being, that homo, if you want, and the ape, but I'd rather leave it an open question. And so I felt that was a little bit prejudicial. But so we in reacting to this, decided we could not really answer the booklet and stay with our intended purpose of writing at the level of the science classroom. So we stepped down our vocabulary and made it much more readable. It's more of a not quite popular, but it's certainly not written for the academician. Now, what does the booklet look like? The booklet has three sections, and I'm...
Hurry.
Okay, three sections. We'll get it in, Walt. We will hurry. I won't detail it. And I hesitate to show you these because what we have is going to look much more like this. But this is our seventh draft. And you can look it over. The printed material is not going to be changed too much. Give us lots of feedback, but make it on spelling and things like that. Because little typos. We don't want to go to edition number 8, do we, Walt? And so if you want to look it over, this is the way the printed text is going to be. We're going to have a nice layout. Jenny Hearn, Walt's wife, is working on the layout. I'm going to have some outline and color, things like that. A neat cover. But essentially, the booklet is going to be in three sections. Number 1, coping with creation-evolution controversy. And first, science teacher's dilemma. Second, the classroom guidelines for the science teacher. And you'd be surprised at some of the great things Walt has thought up to help the science teacher. Taught science a long time, and his helps are really helpful. And correcting past mistakes. This is a gem. Two mistakes. One of them, Biloxi footprints. Who made it? Creationists. But it was corrected. Second mistake, Piltdown Man. Who made it? Paleoanthropologists. How long did it last? 40 years. Why did it last so long? Well, read the booklet and find out. Then the second part, teachings about origins. Four open questions. And the first one deals with the origin of the universe. Question, did the universe have a beginning? Second question, did life on Earth arise by chance? Third open question, where did the animals come from? See, that's not an open question to people who wrote this booklet. We know where the animals came from. We have all the fossils. But do we? I think when you read this, you'll see our evidence is... will stand up pretty well, that it's an open question where the animals really came from. And the fourth one, do we share a common ancestor with the ape? And then we close the booklet with your role as a science teacher, some practical wrapping up of the situation, and close the bibliography. Now, what have we accomplished in this? We think we've accomplished quite a few things. We almost hesitate to touch on this, but I will. We've tried to distinguish between microevolution and macroevolution. Most of you know what I mean by that, but very